Continuing with our reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we're at Canto 5, Chapter 25, verse number 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisance under the personality of God and Narayan, under Narayan, Narayan Rishi, supermost human being, Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, Srila Vyasadeva, the author, Srila Prabhupada, commentator, translator, commentator, and our dear most spiritual master. Nasta praisho bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavri naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering of service under the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and thus transcendental loving service under the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. The glories of Lord Ananta. Sa eva bhagavan ananto ananta punarnava arideva. Upasamrita marsha upasamrita marsha roshavego Lokanam Swastaya Aste. This is prose, so I think I'll just read it once myself. Sa eva Bhagavan Ananto Nanta Gunarnava Haridevu Pasamrita Marsha Roshavego Lokanam Swastaya Aste. That wasn't too bad. Anybody else want to try? Anybody want to chant? It's really easy. Okay. Word for word. Saha, that. Eva, certainly. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ananta, Anantadev. Anantaguna Arnava. The reservoir of unlimited transcendental qualities. Harideva, the original Lord, or non-different from the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pasamrita, who has restrained. Amarsha, of his intolerance. Rosha, and wrath. Vega, the force. Lokanam, of all people on all planets. Svastaye, for the welfare. Aste, remains. Translation. Lord Sankarshan is the ocean of unlimited spiritual qualities, and thus he is known as Anantadev. He is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the welfare of all living entities within this material world, he resides in his abode, restraining his anger and intolerance. Can you repeat, please? Lord Shankarshan is the ocean of unlimited spiritual qualities. And thus he is known as Anantadev. He is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the welfare of all living entities within this material world, he resides in his abode, restraining his anger and intolerance. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantadev's main mission is to dissolve this material creation. But he checks his anger and intolerance. This material world is created to give the conditioned souls another chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But most of them do not take advantage of this facility. After the creation, they again exercise their old propensity for lording it over the material world. These activities of the conditioned souls anger Anantadev, and he desires to destroy the entire material world. Yet, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is kind towards us, and he checks his anger and intolerance. Only at certain times does he express his anger and destroy the material world.
Saeva Bhagavan Ananto Nanda Gunarnava Arideva Pasam Ritamarsha Rushave Golokanam Svastaya Aste.
Lord Shankarshana is the ocean of unlimited spiritual qualities, and thus he is known as Anantadev. He is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the welfare of all living entities within this material world, he resides in his abode, restraining his anger and intolerance.
Om Agyanatmanandasya Yananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stabitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Saga Jatam Sagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Purishana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Scha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Rara Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchokalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Putitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Shri Gaura Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
These series of verses, there are only 15 verses in this chapter, but they're extremely pleasurable to the devotees. I just thought we'd go back. I mean, the glories of Ananta are unlimited. So I don't think anyone will mind if we just go back and read the first few verses leading up to this also, so we can remember Lord Ananta's position. First verse, translation. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "My dear king, approximately 240,000 miles beneath the planet Patala lives another incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the expansion of Lord Vishnu, known as Lord Ananta or Lord Sankarshan. He is always in the transcendental position, but because he was worshipped by Lord Shiva, the deity of Tamagun or darkness, he is sometimes called Tamasi. Lord Ananta is the predominating deity of the material mode of ignorance, as well as the false ego of all conditioned souls. When a conditioned living being thinks, 'I am the enjoyer, and this world is meant to be enjoyed by me,' this conception of life is dictated to him by Sankarshan. Thus, the mundane conditioned soul thinks himself the Supreme Lord." Text 2. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "This great universe, situated on one of Lord Anantadeva's thousands of hoods, appears just like a white mustard seed. It is infinitesimal compared to the hood of Lord Ananta." Text 3. "At the time of devastation, when Lord Anantadeva desires to destroy the entire creation, he becomes slightly angry. Then from between his two eyebrows appears three-eyed Rudra carrying a trident. This Rudra, who is known as Sankarshan, is the embodiment of the 11 Rudras, or incarnations of Lord Shiva. He appears in order to devastate the entire creation." Text 4. "The pink transcendental toenails on the Lord's lotus feet are exactly like valuable gems polished to a mirror finish. When the unalloyed devotees and leaders of the snakes offer their obeisances to Lord Sankarshan with great devotion, they become very joyful upon seeing their own beautiful faces reflected in his toenails. Their cheeks are decorated with glittering earrings, and the beauty of their faces is extremely pleasing to see." Text 5. "Lord Ananta's arms are attractively long, beautifully decorated with bangles, and completely spiritual. They are white, and so they appear like silver columns. When the beautiful princesses of the serpent kings, hoping for the Lord's auspicious blessing, smear his arms with aguru pulp, Jai Shishi Krishna Balaram, Shishi Radhe Sham Lalita Vishaka Shishi Gorni Thai Ki Jai. When the beautiful princesses of the serpent kings, hoping for the Lord's auspicious blessing, smear his arms with aguru pulp, sandwood pulp, and kumkum, the touch of his limbs awakens lusty desires within them. Understanding their minds, the Lord looks at the princesses with a merciful smile, and they become bashful, realizing that he knows their desires. When they smile beautifully and look upon the Lord's lotus face, which is beautified by reddish eyes rolling slightly from intoxication and delighted by love for his devotees." So the Lord is a repository of all transcendental qualities. And we hear from these verses, certainly he's a repository of extreme opposites. He's intensely angry, so angry he destroys the whole material universe. And yet, he's lovingly exchanging relations of love with his pure devotees. So the Lord's, Srila Prabhupada talks throughout his books about the Lord's anger His transcendental anger. Actually, the Lord has no purpose in coming to this material world because he is completely self-satisfied. But he comes to exchange relations of love with his pure devotees, and he comes to establish principles of religion. Within that process, he annihilates the demons. So the whole purpose of creation, as stated by Srila Prabhupada in the purport here, is to allow us conditioned souls the chance to go back to home, back to Godhead. This is the Lord's mercy upon us, because we are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. And so Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada explains, is much more eager to get his parts and parcels back than we can even comprehend. Only when we start to reciprocate with the Lord in more and more intimate dealings can we get more and more of a sense of how much the Lord loves us, and a sense of how we are absolutely dependent on the Lord. Within every stage, even in the conditioned stage of life, we are absolutely dependent at every moment on the mercy of the Lord. And therefore, the Lord Krishna states, his ultimate instruction is sarva dharmam prijyaja mamikam saranam raja ham tvam sarvamukshai, that Masuchaha, he says, surrender to me, I will protect you from all sinful reactions. But due to false ego, which is stated here, this conception is actually being produced by Lord Shankarshan. Because of false ego, we are thinking that there are so many other controllers besides Krishna, particularly ourselves, that we are the supreme controller. But when we fully surrender to Krishna and become completely dependent on his mercy at every moment, then we begin to realize the purport of, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states in the Shishashtika, how one moment becomes like unlimited time frame, like millions of years. For the devotee who's developed his bhav with the Lord, then any apparent separation from Krishna in his mind is worse than death. It's said that the path of sense enjoyment is so detrimental for a person desiring to advance spiritually that one should choose drinking poison willingly over engaging in unrestricted sense enjoyment. So the purpose of this whole material creation is to give us a chance to go back to Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada also explains in the purport that most of us in the material world, we don't take advantage of this facility. We think we have all the time in the world. And although we have just a very, very short lifetime, we still think we have a very, very long time Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains very nicely how there's really no time left for self-realization. And one doesn't really have the facility to think, as most people do, that later on in my life, I'll take advantage of my old age, I'll retire, and then I can focus on spiritual life. But the Vedas say, no, atato brahma jigyasa, that now is the time for self-realization. We actually don't have the luxury to wait around. And instead, by King Kulashekhar, in his prayers to the Lord, that may I die immediately while I still have some youthful energy left and some ability to concentrate my mind on you. And he says, otherwise, at the moment of death, it will be impossible to remember you. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how one comes out of the womb, which is, we've heard from Param Bhagavatam, from Srila Prabhupada's writings, that, you know, it's a very distressful condition for the eternal soul, packed into a gross material body and surrounded by so many obnoxious elements, stool, pus, and we're packed into that airtight bag for 9 months. And it's so distressful that many times the soul is shocked into calling out for Krishna within the womb, saying, please relieve me from this horrible situation. Then when one's born, one comes out, and in the association of all the smiling relatives and family members, one's told how cute he is and how beautiful he looks, and is passed around and bounced on everyone's knee, and becomes the center of everyone's attention. Immediately he starts thinking, oh, I'm the center of the universe. This is pretty nice. And then in youth, one's time is wasted in youthful sporting activities. Usually one's parents have to drag one away from such sporting activities to have to go to school. And then one goes to school, one goes to the early part of school and starts learning how to read and write, learning about all about the external world around him. And then before he knows it, all of a sudden, he or she reaches puberty. And that at that point, material life really kicks in. And the unlimited desires within the heart, sex desire, becomes manifest. And then one becomes really, really bewildered and engages in, nowadays, usually unrestricted sexual activities with the opposite sex, with many different persons, and ends up becoming firmly entangled, and then has to, of course, get a job to work to pay for his sex life, his family situation. And after many, many years of that, then one has children, and the attachment to the children further binds one's heart, this hridaya granti. One becomes further and further bound to material conception of life, to the material ego, thinking that I am this material body and material possessions are mine, this is my family. Therefore, I must maintain them at all costs. And nowadays, one has to work. One has to, first of all, empty all his family's treasury so he can go and get a college degree and then a graduate degree, sometimes all the way to get a PhD. And then one finds he has to sometimes work, sometimes two, three jobs to be able to support his family. or if he is extremely fortunate by some past karma, he may be very successful in business and be able to afford to maintain his family. But then where is the opportunity to actually engage one's senses in the service of the Lord? And bhakti yoga means practice. Sadhana bhakti means practice. Because by hearing and chanting, we remember. And if most of our life is spent hearing and chanting about mundane subject matters, then that is what we're going to remember at the point of death. And if we haven't practiced in the beginning of our life this practice of sadhana bhakti, and ultimately it doesn't matter. This process of Krishna consciousness is so amazing compared to any other process of self-realization. It's been made so incredibly easy by the Lord. Why? Because it's actually non-different from the personality of Godhead himself. And it's been made so easy and is so incredibly practical that regardless of whatever is one's status of life, if one takes sincerely to the process of Krishna consciousness, practices the principles of brahmacharya, even in one's married life, then one can prosecute, one can become Krishna conscious, even when having to engage in material activities in the material world to support his family, to support himself. One learns this art, this science of yukta vairagya, of how to engage every so-called material thing, which is actually spiritual because it's all emanating from Krishna, to engage it in Krishna consciousness, and that's spiritualized one's mind and senses. So Srila Prabhupada has mentioned that this process of Krishna consciousness is a process of re-spiritualization, whereby we learn how to recognize that everything is emanating from Krishna, everything is the property of the Supreme Lord, and we learn this science of how to engage everything in the Supreme Lord's service. And by the simple act of renouncing of everything for Krishna's service, then we're freed from this stringent knot that's produced from intense fruitive activities that we've engaged in life after life. So this is a rare opportunity to engage in Krishna consciousness in this human form of life. Most human beings don't take it seriously, but we've been afforded the great opportunity to engage in this process, and we're learning how to perceive everything as the Lord's energy. And this is very instructive also, and it shows the Lord's extreme compassion that, you know, although we've, you know, been forgetting Krishna since time immemorial, and originally we said, okay, that's it, I don't want to serve you anymore, I want to know what it's like to become the Supreme and enjoy my own senses, Krishna creates an incredibly elaborate situation in the material world so we can play out our fantasies. And at the same time, he enters our heart as super soul and inspires our remembrance. And then he, as Ananta, he lives down at the root of this material world, down below Patala, and supports all the universes on his different hoods, as is said here, as mustard seeds. And it's been nicely explained by other speakers also how that, you know, I mean, how does that make us feel? If each mustard seed, and sometimes it's explained here that the universes are like white mustard seeds in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's mentioned by Vrindavan Das Thakur, how each universe is like a drop of water on Ananda's head, and he doesn't even feel it. He actually doesn't even know where it is on his hood. I mean, how insignificant are we actually when it comes down to it? So this process of Krishna consciousness is learning, is experiencing how insignificant we really are. And it's difficult a lot of the times because we are so absorbed in our false ego. We are so attached to our material conceptions of life. And so we have to experience difficulties, so many difficulties the false ego puts us through us generally before we can completely surrender to Krishna. But by being extremely attentive to our duties in Krishna consciousness, becoming very attentive to chanting Krishna's name no matter what our senses tell us, our realization may be at the time, we know theoretically, philosophically, that Krishna is non-different from his name. And he's right there, much more eager to give us his mercy than we could ever desire. And this Anantadev, it's really quite interesting because Anantadev or Sankarshan, he's the source of Mahavishnu, the source of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the source of Kshuradakshaya Vishnu. So he's not only the destroyer of the whole material world, but he's the source of creation as well. And he's actually the expansion of Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram is, as Srila Prabhupada says, non-different from Krishna. Although his just his color is different. And of course, he carries out so many functions for Krishna. And he epitomizes this this understanding, this concept of servitude to its ultimate degree. Lord Balaram is so satisfied by the service mood that he's so happy to serve Krishna that he, in the spiritual world, of course, he expands as the spiritual world. He expands as the path that Krishna walks down. He expands as Krishna's jewelry. He expands as Krishna's shoes. So this is also very, very instructive for us. How pleasing it is for the Lord to exhibit this nature as a servant, so we can understand how pleasing it is and how fortunate we are to be able to act in a capacity of servant. And gradually, as we get more and more taste for our activities in Krishna consciousness, for being the servant, then we can give up this idea of being the master, trying to become the supreme enjoyer. So like the universe is just like a mustard seed on Ananta's unlimited heads, so it's explained the living soul within this body is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. Indeed, we are very, very insignificant. And this whole material creation is very, very insignificant. However, when we take our own insignificant souls and engage them in Krishna's service, and we use so many insignificant things to accomplish our service, our own insignificant soul and all these insignificant things we offer to Krishna, they change and immediately become unlimitedly significant. And this we experience in the course of our day-to-day activities in Krishna consciousness. And this mentality, by learning to see Krishna in everything, endears us to the Lord. Krishna says in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, "For one who sees me in everything, and sees me everywhere, and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me." So our desire is the tipping point in this material world, in what makes our life very insignificant and really not worth living, and very significant. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that for one who has become fortunate, as we all have, in this path of Krishna consciousness, therefore it's our duty also to make others fortunate. Lord Shiva explains this in the Bhagavatam. And, you know, this involves becoming, sacrificing our own convenience for the convenience of others. It's a danger in the process of our going on in our Krishna consciousness, because the mind is always looking for a comfortable place within this material world. And even in this society of devotees, we're looking for a certain comfort zone. And therefore, it's said that one should seek out the association of more advanced devotees. If we're simply going on with our activities in Krishna consciousness, and we're feeling ourselves very comfortable and very, we should be satisfied in our prosecution of Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, we should be really willing to take risks, and we should always be looking to challenge our own spiritual realization by trying to tap into the realization of more advanced devotees. Because this concept, this idea that we are this material body, and that we are a product of matter, and that material possessions are ours, is so deep rooted within our consciousness. This idea that we're going to live forever is so much ingrained in our consciousness. I was when we attended Srimad Brahmananda Prabhu's ceremony of taking his body all the way down to the ocean, setting him on a funeral pyre and burning his body and watching his body burn and chanting Hare Krishna. It was, how many devotees here attended that? So many devotees were there. And for days and days, my mind was as if in a stupor. Because it's one thing to philosophically understand that I don't die, I'm not this body. But when I actually, you know, was there watching the body get burned, something clicked within my mind, and something within there started saying, oh no, maybe I'm not going to live forever. And I was thinking, I saw Brahmananda Prabhu a few weeks before he passed, and we engaged in some nice exchanges with him and with his brother. And then when he left, unexpected like that, I was like, darn it, I should have spent more time with him. Which is, of course, always the lamentation when there's, you know, God brothers and devotees who, you know, we value their association and they leave. But for days afterwards, I didn't feel like eating. I felt it was almost like in a state of shock, and it took days and days for me to kind of, you know, get back on kind of an even keel like that. So, you know, we learn so much. Still, we're so attached to learning things through our senses, and through our eyes and through our senses. And so, taking advantage of such situations, even though we may not personally know the devotee, is very, very valuable. And that's, for me, is really one of the values of being able to live, spend a lot of time in Vrindavan. So I think we'll end here. Does anyone have any questions or comments, corrections, criticisms? Now's the time. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Lord Shankarshan ki jai.